Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
In a split second, this courthouse went from the scene of a high-profile trial to a high-profile security scene. The lead starts right now. A horrific scene outside this courthouse after a man lit himself on fire. Inside the courthouse, there's a major development in the hush money case against former President Donald Trump. A full jury plus alternates now all seated, setting the stage for opening statements. This hour, we're going to go all in on this case, dissecting the next steps. How long can the prosecution hold out and keep its witness list out of the hands of Donald Trump and his defense team? Also this hour, in an extraordinary move, some 165 House Democrats came to the aid of Republican Speaker Mike Johnson, drawing the ire of hardline Republicans and putting Johnson even closer to potentially losing his job. Welcome to The Lead. I'm Phil Mattingly in today for Jake Tapper, and we are live outside the New York courthouse where the former president's criminal hush money trial is playing out as we speak. The jury selection process, that is now complete. Today, Judge Merchan seating five more alternates, bringing the total number to six. Yesterday, of course, a full jury of 12 was seated, made up of seven men and five women, a total of 18 needed for the trial to begin. Now, Judge Merchan now holding a Sandoval hearing, what's known as a Sandoval hearing, that's going to determine whether the prosecution can ask Trump if he testifies about certain aspects of his legal past, including the E. Jean Carroll defamation case and the civil fraud judgment handed down earlier this year. Now, Trump's attorneys are fiercely pushing back. The outcome could factor into whether Trump decides to testify at all later in the trial, something he said he was going to do. We start off with CNN senior justice correspondent Evan Perez, who joins me now. Evan, let's talk first about what a Sandoval hearing actually is. For people who don't know, what's happening right now inside the courtroom?
Well, in New York, what this hearing does is it allows the defense and the prosecution to fight it out in front of the judge as to what types of evidence they can bring in if Donald Trump chooses to testify. And so one of the things they want to do is to impeach his credibility as a witness before this jury. And so what's going on right now in this hearing that is still ongoing is the defense is pushing back on every single instance that the prosecution wants to bring up. You pointed out not only the E. Jean Carroll ruling, right? One of the things that they got into a big back and forth over is the prosecution wants to be able to cite the earlier civil fraud judgment against the former president. And one of the things that the defense is saying is that, look, that is a civil proceeding. The standard of evidence, the standard of that you need to prove for the judge to rule in favor of the prosecution is much lower. It's just a preponderance of evidence as opposed to a criminal trial where you have to have beyond a reasonable doubt. And so the defense is saying that's just not fair. And so they're pointing out that if you do that, then we should be able to bring in some of the various problems with Michael Cohen as a witness as well. And so that's going back and forth. The judge saying we're not going to mix apples and oranges here as part of his decision making in this. So this is, we expect it's going to keep going for at least another hour.
Yeah, and it's been a fascinating back and forth. Jeremy Herb and Kara Scannell, our team inside the courtroom, have been reading everything out. It's been pretty fierce up to this point. I do want to ask you, because our colleague Kara Scannell also broke that there's going to be a hearing happening, I think, right now in an appeals court tied to this case. There's like 70 moving parts right now.
Right.
What is this?
That is, all of a sudden we heard that there's a hearing that is going on just uptown here. The appeals court, a full panel, is now hearing the former president's motion to change venue. Now, he's already made this request. A judge had ruled against it. An appeals court judge had ruled against that motion. But now the appeals court itself, a panel of the appeals court, is now hearing that motion. And so that is ongoing. It began about 30 minutes ago. Obviously, the former president has made very, very clear he does not believe he can get a fair jury from people here in Manhattan. Of course, what we've seen play out, Phil, tells us otherwise, right? I mean, you've heard some of these 18 people who've been chosen to sit on this jury. You've heard people who have empathy for him, or at least have political views that support his. So it's not clear to me that he has a leg to stand on, that he needs to move this trial out of Manhattan, because it's clear that this jury is a lot more diverse than the former president would have people believe.
Yeah, and unlike when he lost earlier, that jury is now seated. Everything seems to be moving in the direction. We'll see where that goes.
Very quickly.
Evan Perez, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Well, with me now is Stacey Schneider, a Manhattan criminal defense attorney. She was also a contestant on Trump's TV show, The Apprentice, also with me. Jeremy Saland, who is a prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Stacey, I want to start with you. We now have all the alternates seated. The jury is seated. And what can you explain to people who may be wondering why there are 12 and then 6? What's the instance in which an alternate would have to step in here? Is that something you expect?
Sure. In this case in particular, I actually expect an alternate to step in. I think they're very valuable here. We saw what happened in jury selection. They had picked 7 jurors, and then 2 jurors came back the next day and wanted to be off the panel. So anything can happen here. This is a wild card case. It's extremely different, obviously, prosecuting a former president. So what will happen is, if a juror gets sick during the trial testimony, or has a family emergency, or something goes wrong in their personal life and they need to step off the case, they will go to the judge and ask permission. Hopefully that never happens. But the alternates are sitting next to the jury while the trial is underway. They are hearing the same evidence that the sworn-in jury panel is hearing, and they will be immediately available to step in if needed.
You know, I'm glad you kind of mentioned the process that we witnessed, or at least read about, in terms of jury selection. And Evan alluded to this too as well, Jeremy, where in one case in particular, a prospective alternate was talking and started to cry. She asked to be dismissed after she said, quote, "This is so much more stressful," in her words, "than I thought." These jurors, without question, are going to be under a ton of pressure. And I think this morning we saw the emotion come out of some that underscores that these aren't just kind of random unnamed individuals. These are real people. And this is something that you can't even fathom unless you're one of those jurors. How does that affect this case, Jeremy?
It's extremely problematic. And I've said multiple times, there's the Donald Trump, who was the innocent until proven guilty, and if proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, in that courtroom, and deserves the same due process and the same presumption of innocence that any one of us have. And then there's a Donald Trump outside that courtroom who says a lot of very vitriolic and frightening and aggressive things that gives pause to be very gentle and nice to potential jurors. We know that about the judge. We know that about prosecutors and witnesses. And it has a really negative and frightening impact on those potential jurors who are scared potentially to say, I don't want to be a part of this process. I don't want to be subject to scrutiny. I don't want the media talking about me and my family. I don't want people showing up at my house or saying things about me online. So it's very, again, I use the term frightening repeatedly because it has a way to taint the jury. It's not good for the jury to have that constant agony or angst. So the best thing that Donald Trump can do, and Judge Mershon can do, and this can be discussed later on, is really get Donald Trump to stop saying the things he has that incites people to do things that are adverse to the criminal justice system.
Yeah, it's a critical point, and I think open question, and as you noted, we're going to talk about it in a little bit. I do, though, Stacey, before we get to that, talk about what we know about the 5 alternates selected today, because Evan made the point, you know, whatever the former president says on Truth Social or what he's been talking about this trial and a fair trial in the jury, hasn't necessarily lined up with a woman who's originally from Spain, married with an adult child, does not really, at least according to her, follow the news, says she doesn't, quote, have strong opinions about former President Donald Trump. There's a man, all we know about him is he's a native New Yorker who loves martial arts. Cece, when you at least read through the kind of those top line things, what stands out to you?
What stands out to me is this alternate panel of 5 is perfect for both sides. This is the most neutral vanilla panel out of all the jury selection that has gone on this week. Most of these 5 jurors are not really that into the news. They're not watching as much. They tune into certain news stations, but it's not a hobby or a habit. And that's good for both sides. That's the ideal juror in this case, is the most neutral person possible who doesn't have an opinion about Donald Trump either way and is willing to listen openly to the evidence presented by the people of the city of New York. I will add one funny thing, though. The second juror who was picked, what we know about them enjoying martial arts, I predict that this trial is going to be a martial arts display between Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. So that should be interesting for that person sitting there listening to the evidence come in.
Yeah, if they're entertained by martial arts as part of their love, they're certainly going to get a lot of that back and forth. We're seeing some of it in the Sandoval hearing right now. Jeremy, a couple of the other alternates, well, there's a woman who's said she's not a big news person, looks at the New York Times, Reuters, and BBC, does not have social media. Another woman who works for a clothing company, is married, gets her news from Google. When you kind of think through this in your former role, how are you approaching this as this all kind of plays out?
Well, you know, there are some people who would say you just pick the first 12 and then you pick the next six if that's how many alternates you're going to have. I don't necessarily subscribe to that view. But you want people who are smart enough to understand some things which might be a little complex, meaning this is not a hush money case. This is about whether or not these records are falsified in those elements and whether or not there was an effort to conceal a separate crime. So you want people who are smart enough to grasp that and take themselves out of this and look from the sort of outside in and say, well, did the prosecution prove their case and not hold them to some unrealistic burden? And you want those jurors who also are going to not, you know, concerned with a lawyer who's a juror, is, you know, not to impose their belief, but follow what the judge says and understand that there's going to be a witness here. For example, Michael Cohen, but not just Michael Cohen, who is admitted to lying, who's been convicted of crime, and say, I can still be objective. Yes, prosecution, I'm going to hold you to the burden, but no criminal defense. I'm not just going to side with you and say, because Michael Cohen, for example, has a criminal record, I can't find him credible. So I think they've done a good job. And to Stacey's point, this is a fairly mundane group, at least on the six alternates. But they've done a good job to find jurors who appear to be smart enough, have engineers, attorneys, a teacher, to follow the law and be above and beyond. But at the same time, they have that common sense to say, I can understand credibility. I can look at that person and see what they say and then make that assessment.
And if you're watching right now, you see on your screen the hallway where the president has, former president has departed from in the past. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on that camera over the course of the coming minutes and hours. Stacey, the idea of objectivity, you know, I've talked to some people who were just kind of passively observing all this, to the extent anybody can passively observe something related to the former president, who said that's not possible. Everybody has an opinion. This guy's got 100% name ID, basically, at this point. Everybody likes him or hates him. It's one of the two. Do you disagree with that?
That there's really nobody who can be that objective about Donald Trump? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, essentially, can you objectively, you know, can you look at this case for what it is and separate however you feel about the individual?
I see, which is exactly the question the jurors were asked by the attorneys on both sides. I mean, I think all of us as human beings want to think we're fair people and that we're not going to be judgmental and we're going to sit in the room and listen with an open mind. But again, we're all human, and for those of us who've watched, you know, Donald Trump on television, and I've certainly, you know, been in the room with him many times through my experience, it's hard to separate that from the man sitting at the defense table who looks really tired and grumpy right now. So, you know, those preconceived notions, those opinions, even though jurors have sworn that they can put them aside and make a judgment, they always come in. It's just human nature.
Yeah, and that's the challenge for lawyers on both sides. Stacey and Jeremy, hang with me. We've got much more to get to as we go looking at the camera in the hallway. The former president departs. Now, Donald Trump has also continued to rail against a gag order in this case. He claims that it violates his free speech rights. We're going to get into the validity of that claim and prosecutors refusing to share their witness list. How typical is that? We're going to get the expert opinion. Plus, the heightened security around the courthouse even before today's horrific fire. We're going to be back in a moment. Stay with us.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're looking at a live look inside the courthouse where key hearings in the hush money case have been underway. Judge Merchan just announcing that the Sandoval hearing is complete. He will reserve his judgment for right now, but should have an answer on Monday. Stacey Schneider and Jeremy Salander back with me right now, both a defense attorney, former prosecutor in Jeremy's case. Stacey, back to you on the issue of the gag order, because I am somewhat flummoxed, again, not a lawyer, by someone having a gag order, posting regularly on social media in a way that doesn't seem to imply he feels that constrained. But he did post earlier today, Judge Merchan is railroading me, in quotes, that he has gagged, in quotes, me so that I cannot talk about the most important topics, including his totally disqualifying conflict of interest and taking away my constitutional right of free speech. Look, all snark and joking and back and forth aside, the idea of what he's saying right now, the gag order violating his free speech, particularly in such a high-stakes legal moment for him, is there validity to that?
There's zero validity to that. In fact, Donald Trump doesn't understand the law behind the First Amendment. The First Amendment only protects certain types of speech. It's limited, and the law does not allow someone to engage in speech that could cause harm to the community. There's a very famous Supreme Court case, you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded movie theater if there's no fire. That's not free speech. In this particular case, this has gone on forever, that judges have put gag orders in effect during trials. There are witnesses to protect, there are litigants to protect. This is perfectly reasonable behavior by the court. And in fact, I would argue that the court, Judge Merchan, is constitutionally protected by imposing this type of gag order. He's not going to be overturned on appeal for doing this. This is not a violation of Donald Trump's rights in any way. This is more of a Donald Trump PR move. But if you're going to invoke the Constitution, at least do it correctly if you were the former president of the United States.
Jeremy, the flip side of this, that being kind of the back and forth about where the former president sits, prosecutors have already accused the former president of violating that gag order. I guess one of the questions I had is, if this issue is so important, why is the hearing not until next Tuesday, more than a week after the jury selection actually started here?
Yeah, I think that Judge Merchan just wants to get this moving forward, because you delay and you have this hearing, it's going to delay the jury selection process. And the more time you get stuck with that, I think that's bad for the case. But understand, there's two different types, or we'll call it two different types of contempt or violations of that gag order. One would be, for example, if it was in front of the judge and he could summarily say, you have violated the conditions of whatever I set forth, and I can make a decision now. And then the second, like we're seeing here, is it's not in his presence, and then we have that hearing. And Donald Trump has a right to protect himself and respond to that. And it has to be proven. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. It can be a civil or it could be a criminal. Here it would likely be criminal, because it would be to punish him for his actions as opposed to making someone whole, for example, up to $1,000, up to 30 days in jail. I think the judge is delaying it, not because he doesn't think it's important, But I think because there's other practical things that if we get bogged down to it, he must be saying to himself, we're not going to move this case forward. And you have to get this moving. Otherwise, we're never going to get to an end, whenever that may be.
Stacey, we got about a minute left. Would an average person in this situation face consequences here?
Yes. I mean, this is multiple violations. I think a judge, the magic number in Manhattan is probably 2 or 3. A judge will kind of let someone skate along the line, but this is multiple violations. And I don't think Donald Trump would really care if he was fined. What's the difference? It's worth its weight in gold in publicity just to get these statements out, you know, to get a couple $1,000 a hit fine from the judge. Judges have put people in jail for contempt of court, but that's not going to happen here. It's unlikely. I mean, that would just bring extra scrutiny onto the judge in the middle of a trial. I don't think that's realistic, but there has to be some way to stop Donald Trump from doing this and respect the process, the trial process. And if any judge is capable of coming up with a formula for that, I believe it's Judge Mershon. He is such a no-nonsense judge who takes control of his courtroom. We saw the way he moved jury selection along at the speed and the pacing. No nonsense again. He reprimanded Donald Trump for grimacing at the jurors. So he will have a solution to this eventually. But Donald is still going to test his patience, I'm sure.
Yeah, as he's done with all of his legal cases, no doubt about that. Stacey Schneider, Jeremy Saland, thank you guys very much. And we are continuing to show you pictures from inside the courthouse, just outside the courtroom. We'll keep an eye on if the former president comes out. Also, outside the courthouse, the safety of those inside the courtroom and those outside, very much an issue right now. The heightened situation this trial creates for law enforcement and first responders, just illustrated earlier this afternoon by an intense incident just a few feet away from where we're sitting right now. Stay with us. Well, we're back right outside the courthouse where the former president's criminal hush money trial is taking place as we speak. And we're also getting new information about what's happening inside that courtroom. CNN's Evan Perez and John Miller join me now. Evan, I want to start with you because I said last block that the Sandoval hearing was over. There's still a back and forth. There's also a very intense back and forth during that Sandoval hearing. What's happening?
Well, one of the things that's going on is that the Trump team is trying to argue to try to exclude certain things and try to essentially relitigate certain things that the judge has already decided. And he's responding quite sharply. He's saying, I don't want you to relitigate things, decisions that I've already made. For instance, they wanted there is a discussion right now about the Access Hollywood tape. The judge had said you cannot play that tape, but you can make reference to it. And so the Trump team is trying to have another go at that discussion. And so that's, you know, one of many things that apparently the Trump team wants to try to bring up again. And the judge is having none of this. He seems quite annoyed that he believes they're trying to go back and essentially revisit decisions that he's already made. And so, look, at the end of this, the judge says that he's going to go back and look to see whether earlier statements he made, whether he was inconsistent. But he's trying to shut down at least some of this discussion because he believes he's already made some rulings that address these questions.
Should we expect that this is strategic to some degree, right? Like, there may be merit to this particular issue, but they're going to keep bringing as many things up as they can to kind of slow things down, muddy the waters, complicate this process.
Right. I mean, the other thing that they're trying to do is we know there's another hearing right now. They're trying to buy a little bit of time because just in case they do get their motion to move this trial to another venue, perhaps slowing things down could buy them time in case they get their way. We don't anticipate that that's the way it's going to go, but certainly if you're the defense, you have to take every shot you have.
But we're watching right now inside the courthouse as people are filing out of the courtroom after today's activities appear to be complete. We'll keep you posted as that continues to play out as we watch. The former president has come out and spoken several times this week before and after these hearings. And obviously it has been a long week. There's now a jury that is seated, 12 jurors, 6 alternates as well, moving forward very clearly. John, I do want to ask, a couple of hours ago, there have been a lot of security concerns, a lot of questions about what this would actually look like. In a courtyard about half football field away from where we're sitting right now, an individual lit himself on fire. We don't really know. His condition didn't seem to be good based on the press conference. We also had jurors talk about their concerns about security, about kind of the public nature of this. When you talk to officials inside the NYPD, inside the federal government, what are you hearing right now about how this is all going to work?
Well, this is something they have been planning in a triangle between the New York State court officers, they're in charge in the building, the Secret Service, they're in charge of the close protection of former President Trump, and the NYPD, which is in charge of the overall security outside and the movements of the former president to and from the courthouse. And they have had a lot of chance to do some dress rehearsals. There was the trial in federal court. There were the earlier hearings here. So they have a very detailed plan. The last piece of this is the courthouse itself lends itself to a secure environment. They screen people coming in every day. So for this case, there's a second screening if you're going into or near that courtroom. So it's built for that in some ways, which makes it easier.
The event that happened earlier, the incident, Evan, you were on live television when it happened. What do we know about what that was? Was there a broader threat? Is there a bigger concern about what that means in the individual himself?
So this is an individual who has been here over the last couple of days, carrying his signs and being a presence on the outskirts of the demonstrations, but a bit of a loner in that he didn't fit in with the pro-Trump demonstrators or the anti-Trump demonstrators. And so today when he showed up, it didn't give anyone particular alarm till he took off his hoodie, poured the accelerant over, having thrown the leaflets and the pamphlets that he carried in the air, and then quite suddenly set himself on fire with whatever this accelerant material was, which made him catch fire very quickly and very totally.
Evan, again, you witnessed this. It was a horrifying moment, not connected seemingly to anything that was happening inside the courtroom, which I think almost happened at the same exact time they finished with getting the final alternate for the jury being seated. What was your sense of the reaction of how quickly NYPD was involved, how quickly kind of everything that John's laying out about what's around this place?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think one of my observations from just coming here and watching this scene, I think that there's certainly, I understand that the NYPD in New York want this, the attitude of this entire area to be, you know, business as usual, we're going to keep going on. We're not going to stop for this, right? That's a very New York way of reacting to this. But I've been quite surprised at how open an access there was, at least before this. For instance, the park where this is, the gates were locked over here, but there was free access on the other side. So when this happened, the police had to actually run all around, you know, the whole block to be able to get to the scene. There were no cops right there that I could see. And so I was quite surprised at how open access it was. There were just a couple of protesters, Trump protesters, who were there. You know, we've been doing this at various courthouses around the country for the former president. This one has been, I think, the most open access that I've seen. And, you know, I get that that's what New York wants, but I have to wonder whether they're going to revisit that security posture.
John, it's a really interesting point, because I understand the balance, particularly allowing people to protest. There's a lot of just normal traffic that's coming through here throughout the course of the day, given where it is. But I was also interested during the press conference earlier about this issue. They made clear there's a lot of stuff we don't see. They have a lot of things in place that maybe aren't as visually apparent as some of the stuff that we do see around here. How significant is the presence outside of the people we're actually looking at, the security officials we're seeing every single day?
Well, there's a network of cameras. There are teams that are scanning social media, looking for any prompts. They're monitoring very carefully whether there are calls for demonstrations, particularly if one came from former President Trump that would bring larger crowds. There is an entire system that links to the NYPD's Intelligence Bureau, to a command center, the Joint Operations Center, where all that information is processed and then shared with the other agencies. So there is a lot you don't see. But to take Evan's point, you have to be clear about what it is you're protecting and what it is you're protecting against. Can you stop a person walking down a public street from setting themselves on fire? No, you can respond quickly to it to attempt to save their lives. The key is to protect the courthouse, to protect the proceedings, to protect the former president, to protect the jurors, the judge, and the prosecutors, and the area from some kind of attack. This was a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, no question. John Miller, always appreciate your expertise. Evan Perez, great work, but also level-headed reporting earlier as this was all happening, and we appreciate it. I'm glad you guys are all okay. We see the former president walking out right now. He's coming to the cameras. Court just wrapping. Let's listen.
Another hearing, and the trial starts on Monday, which is long before a lot of people thought. The judge wants us to go as fast as possible. That's for his reasons, not for my reasons. And this is really a concerted witch hunt, very simple. Everything you heard in there, this is a witch hunt by numerous judges, Democrat judges. You take a look at it, and Gorin is a whack job. What he did was a disgrace. It's being reviewed by the appellate division. And I hope they do justice, because everybody's looking, and nobody, no business is coming into the city. None whatsoever. They're looking at that case. That case is a threat to democracy, frankly, what took place with the AG. A crooked AG, Letitia James, who campaigned on the fact that I'm going to get Trump. That's all she said for 2 years. And it's people don't want to see this stuff. When you have violent criminals all over the streets of New York and nothing happens, so even when they catch him, they let him go. No bail whatsoever. So this is just a concerted witch hunt, whether it's Judge Kaplan with a person I have no idea until they called and said they're suing us. I had no idea who this person was, or this judge, or if you look at Engoron, where he said that Mar-a-Lago, which if it was worth $1 billion or $1.5 billion, he said it was worth $18 million because that suited his narrative. But what's happening in this city and all over the country, but what's happening in particular in this city, some are very good, by the way, some are very fair. Those are really the cities that are thriving. But what's happening here with the judicial system is an outrage. And all over the world they're watching it, and all over the world they're saying it. This is a giant witch hunt to try and hurt a campaign that's beating the worst president in history. Biden's the worst president in the history of our country, beating him by a lot. And this is the only way they think they can win, but it's not going to work. Thank you very much, everybody.
What are your lawyers? What are your thoughts on the jury?
Are your lawyers doing a good job?
What do you think of the man who set himself on fire, sir?
You've been listening to the former president, who went through a litany of issues that he often talks about. Just for complete clarity, there's no evidence that the current president or the White House have anything to do with this current case that he's facing here in New York in the courtroom behind me. Evan, I want to go to you, because I thought, beyond the stuff that we always hear from the former president, what's most fascinating is what preceded that, which was a Sandoval hearing where there was an argument over what could be brought into play if the former president testifies, which gave you a good read on what his last year has been. Name-checking, right? Judge Kaplan, Judge Engoron, yeah. Judge Merchan. Why?
Well, he's got a lot of beefs, and so he's going to name-check every single one of those. And, you know, literally, as this was happening, just uptown, there was another hearing, an appeals court hearing, where a judge was hearing a last-minute request for a stay. Again, they're trying to figure out a way to move this trial. And what the former president's lawyers were doing there were trying to argue that, you know, citing things that happened inside this court, saying, for instance, a woman who had been seated, who said that she felt pressure from the media attention, and so was removed from the jury, and citing that as an example of why he cannot get a fair trial. The opposite is true from this, from what we've seen.
Yeah, it's the number of beefs the former president has is a good way to frame that. Kaplan was the E. Jean Carroll case, and Gorin was a civil fraud case. Obviously, Merchan is what he's dealing with right now.
Right.
It's a lot of legal stuff going on. Evan Perez, John Miller, we appreciate you guys very much. The breaking news just in, court has wrapped the day in Judge Merchan's courtroom. A motion denied in an appeals court where Trump's legal team, as Evan has been talking about, argued for a change of venue in the hush money case. We've got much more from New York and what's happening in the courtroom behind me ahead. Stay with us.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to New York, where just moments ago, court adjourned for the day. Day four of the trial wrapping up. When asked whether he will testify in his hush money criminal trial, the former president, Donald Trump, said again, yes. Plus, in an appeals court, a request for interim stay of the criminal trial was denied. Back with me now, Stacia Schneider, Manhattan criminal defense attorney, and Jeremy Saland, a former prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Stacey, in terms of what we heard from the president after court adjourned, you know, making very clear that he believes the judges and several of his legal issues were clearly targeting him, were out to get him. Given everything that you've seen over the course this week, do you have the sense that there is a political tilt to what the president's dealing with in the courtroom behind me?
I think there's an emotional tilt to what the president was dealing with just a few minutes before he came out with that statement. He just came from a Sandoval hearing, which is where the prosecution, in the presence of the judge and the defense counsel, lays out all your prior bad acts through your lifetime that they're aware of. And he's had to listen to them cite all those things, all the cases and trials and problems he's had that he's railed against in the press. He's now had to listen to that up close and personal. And the moment he came out was just before that happened. And I think that statement was not his typical railing about this as a political witch hunt, but more his own emotional response to what he just heard. Defendants coming out of a Sandoval hearing are not pleased. It's just the nature of the hearing. It's kind of the worst preview of what could come if you take the stand. So it's rattling. I think he was rattled.
Yeah, I mean, he was so very specific about the judges that he's had issues with in his cases, cases he's lost, cases he's had issues going forward. And I think, Jeremy, to that point, is this a one-off? Because, you know, as Stacey's laying out, this is a tough Sandoval hearing is where you're hearing kind of the worst possible things that could be coming at you if you testify. Or is this just a signal of what's going to be coming as things get underway on Monday?
I think this is going to be typical Trump response. And when I'm looking down at some notes, and I apologize, but he said what's happening with the judicial system here is an outrage. I think if you care about law and order, you care about justice, what his behavior is outrageous. And it's incredibly destructive to the criminal justice system, and it's single-handedly dismantling it. And you look at what things he says, and as a prosecutor, it kind of excites you a little bit because he's lying. And how do we know he's lying? He says about he didn't know, had no idea about E. Jean Carroll and Judge Kaplan. Well, we know you knew about E. Jean Carroll because you were found responsible for some sort of ugly sexual abusive behavior towards her. You were found for defaming her. He says going on about A.G. James, Attorney General James, and Judge and Goron. He just can't control himself, and all that comes from that man's mouth is damaging, not just to his credibility, but sets him up for further violations and giving all sorts of evidentiary fodder to prosecutors. And it dumbfounds me that his attorneys, who are incredibly experienced, are not proverbially grabbing him by the collar and saying, Mr. Trump, Don, you've got certainly your political issues here in terms of your campaign, but we have a court proceeding, a criminal one, where if you are convicted, you are going to be a felon forever. It doesn't get expunged. He may never see a day in jail, but a felon forever. And that's what's outrageous. That's what's outrageous.
Yeah, inside the courtroom, his attorney's fighting very fiercely to have those issues not be on the table to be asked about if the former president does end up testifying. Outside the courtroom, remember, there's a political campaign shaping this. This is as much what the former president is doing as anything else. Stacey, Jeremy, stand by. We've got much more to discuss. We'll be right back. And we're back with more on the former president's hush money trial. Back with me, Stacey Schneider, a Manhattan criminal defense attorney, and Jeremy Saland, a former prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. All right, guys, looking ahead to Monday, this weekend, Stacey, if you're on the former president's defense team, what are you doing to prepare?
Well, I know what my defense is if I'm on the president's defense team. And the defense is that I have to point out to the jury that Michael Cohen is a convicted felon. That's Trump's former attorney who's pled guilty in federal court and served a 3-year jail sentence involving this alleged scheme. So I'm going to open up probably on Michael Cohen, who's the, you know, the elephant in the room, and give the jury an opinion about how awful he is. And the next thing I'm going to do is open up and explain to the jury what Donald Trump's life was like before he ran for president. He was an international celebrity. He had people coming to him all the time for money. And that I'm going to show the jury that this situation was nothing different from something he would already take care of, had had nothing to do with his election prospects, and that you should really understand who Donald Trump is as a person and how he's operated for his entire life. So I'm creating a narrative that's favorable to my client to show that the prosecution is on a witch hunt.
And Jeremy, if you're on that prosecution team, what are you doing on Saturday and Sunday?
Well, I think that Josh Steinglass and Chris Conroy, these guys have done their homework, and they'll do it twice on Saturday and another time on Sunday. They know what they're doing. They know this inside out. They know it frontwards and backwards. And they're going to simplify this in terms of their opening. This is not going to be a salacious, sexy, hush money case. This is a falsifying business records case. We're going to break it down to its essential elements. We're not going to make it something that it's not. We're not going to allow, and we're going to preempt Donald Trump and his team for taking this on a sideways that it shouldn't go. I am overwhelmingly confident that Josh and Chris and those guys who I overlap with are ready to go. They've been ready yesterday, the week before, and they're not going to get distracted. No matter what happens outside that courtroom, they are staying the course. These are Morgenthau guys who have gone from Morgenthau to Vance, now to Bragg. They've been around the block. Chris was in the homicide investigations unit as a chief. This is a team that Team Trump does not want to mess with. They still have the burden to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, but they're going to do their thing.
Stakes are certainly high. Stacey, Jeremy, thanks so much. Very grateful for you guys hanging with us the entire hour. Much more to come next week. We're also working to get the particulars on what went down in that appeals court after Trump's legal team's request for an interim stay in the case was denied. We'll be back in a moment. And we are back live from New York outside the Manhattan courthouse. There is a huge day coming up on Monday. We expect opening statements to begin in the morning in Donald Trump's hush money cover-up trial. CNN will have special live coverage. Jake Tapper will be here to lead that as our team of correspondents inside the courtroom monitor what's going on throughout the course of the proceedings. Coverage begins Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern. And also coming up on Sunday on State of the Union, Republican Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota, plus Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois. That's Sunday morning at 9 Eastern and again at noon here on CNN. And if you are like us here on The Lead and have been listening to the new Taylor Swift album, it's very long, on repeat, we hope you enjoy your weekend listening sessions. See what we did there. Our coverage continues now with Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.